Hello, Michael. Hello, Ernesto. Today, we have a question that says, Bhagavan uses the analogy of a room filled with furniture versus the space that contains everything. If we want to see the space of the room, our true nature, we just have to get rid of the furniture and rubbish we find there. So the space shines forth. Turning within doesn't mean that we should attend to the space instead of the furniture. In what sense do we need to get rid of the furniture and rubbish? What does that mean?
Right. Okay. This is a nice analogy that Bhagavan used. The space, we are the space, and all thoughts, phenomena, and so on are the rubbish. To get rid of all the rubbish, there's a very simple means, because all the rubbish exists only in the view of ego. So if we get rid of ego, we thereby get rid of all the rubbish, and what remains is the space. The space here is ourself. And the rubbish, as I say, it's all the clutter, I think that's the appropriate word, all the furniture and rubbish and whatever else is in the room. That is all the thoughts and phenomena that seem to preoccupy us now. What is real is only the space, not the clutter. All we need to do is to get rid of the clutter. But we cannot get rid of the clutter so long as we continue to rise as ego, because the very nature of ego is such that that is the two defining characteristics of ego are, firstly, that whenever we rise as ego, firstly, we are always aware of ourselves as I am this body. That is, we always experience ourselves as being limited to the extent of a body. And consequently, we're aware of things other than ourselves. So being aware of ourselves as I am this body and being aware of things other than ourselves are the very nature of ego. Whenever we rise as ego, we always experience ourselves as a body, and we always consequently experience other things. So this body and all the other things, all the phenomena, all objects, they all exist only in the view of ourselves as ego. Without ego, none of these things exist. So long as ego exists, they will all exist. As Bhagavan says in verse 26 of Ulujanapadu, if ego comes into existence, everything comes into existence. If ego doesn't exist, everything doesn't exist. Ego itself is everything. Therefore, investigating what it is giving up everything. So if we want to give up everything, in other words, if we want to remove all the clutter from the room and leave the space alone, all we have to do is to remove ego. Because everything exists in the view of ego. Without ego, nothing else exists. So the way is very simple. Regarding the third sentence here, which is a question, turning within doesn't mean that we should attend to the space instead of the furniture, it does mean that. That is, we ourselves are the space. As you say in the previous sentence, the space of the room is our true nature. So we ourselves are that space. In order to remove all rubbish, all we have to do is to attend to ourselves, attend to the space. When we attend to the space, because the space alone is real, everything else, all phenomena seem to exist only when we look at them. When we don't look at them in sleep, we don't look at anything other than ourselves. We are in sleep, we are not aware of anything except our fundamental awareness of our own existence. So all we know in sleep is our own existence, I am. Because in sleep we don't rise as ego, and therefore we don't look at other things. As soon as we rise as ego, our attention moves away from ourselves towards other things. So in order to put an end to the rising of ego and thereby remove all the rubbish, all we have to do is to attend to ourselves. Because as Bhagavan explained in verse 25 of Alludanaptu, ego is a formless phantom, and it comes into existence grasping form. Put it the other way. Grasping form, it comes into existence. Grasping form, it stands. Grasping and feeding on forms, it flourishes abundantly. Leaving form, it grasps form. So grasping form, since ego is formless, whatever forms it grasps are things other than itself. So all the forms are means objects or phenomena. In other words, all the rubbish in the room, they're all forms. So long as we are grasping those forms by attending to them and being aware of them, we give them a seeming reality. They seem to exist. So long as we are aware of the appearance of the world seems to exist. In sleep, we're not aware of the appearance, and therefore it doesn't seem to exist. So the fault lies in our attending to things other than ourselves. If we look at the rubbish, it seems to exist. But if we look at ourselves, the one in whose view the rubbish seemed to exist, namely ego, will itself subside and disappear. As Bhagavan says also in that verse 25, he says, Tedinal otum pidikum. That means if sought, it takes flight. That is, though the nature of ego, or since the nature of ego is to always grasp forms, things other than itself, if it tries to grasp itself, it has nothing to hold on to because it's just a formless phantom. So by trying to grasp ego, if ego tries to grasp itself, it will subside and dissolve back into its source. When ego dissolves, everything else dissolves with it. That's why he says in the next verse, he concludes verse 26 by saying, therefore, investigating what it is, that means investigating what ego is giving up everything. So how to get rid of all rubbish? Simply by attending to ego. When we attend to ego, our attention is withdrawn from other things. So all those other things recede into the background of our awareness. Ego with nothing to hold on to except itself subsides back into its source. And what remains is only the space of pure awareness, I am. That is what we actually are. Does that adequately answer this question?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think understanding the nature of ego is very important here because many people might think that if the problem is the rubbish or the furniture, I have to in some way locate the rubbish and collect the rubbish and get
exactly.
out of the room. So
exactly.
By understanding that nature, it sounds like counterintuitive at first glance. Yes. if you don't understand the nature of ego, right?
Yeah, but this is the key to understanding Bhagavan's teaching. That is Bhagavan's teaching. So what Bhagavan has revealed more clearly than has ever been explained before is the nature of ego. What he says in verse 25 of Alludanaptu is an extremely deep and extremely crucial teaching. Because if we understand that the nature of ego is to rise, stand, and flourish by attending to other things, but to subside by attending to itself, there we have the solution. The problem lies in when we rise ego, we attend to other things. So attending to other things is a problem. If instead of attending to other things, we attend to ourselves, ego will thereby subside and all problems will disappear along with it. Because for whom are all problems? Problems are only for ego. For whom is all the rubbish? Only for ego. If you investigate ego, when you find ego is non-existent, all the rubbish is also non-existent. All the clutter is non-existent. And all that is there is the infinite space of pure awareness, which is what we actually are. Even now, we are only that.
The problem is ever the catcher.
Sorry?
The catcher, no?
Yes.
Who is catching, no?
Yeah, the
ego.
Catcher has to catch himself.
is the problem ever? When you see whatever is in the room, no?
Yeah.
This furniture is very liar. This furniture is very guilty. This furniture.
Yeah.
Who is yeah, catching yeah. that? This is you go to the catcher and
yes,
finish the problems with the furniture.
Yes. We all face so many problems in life. We put the blame on the problems, but we are the root of the problems because those problems exist in whose view? Only in the view of ourselves as ego. When we don't rise as ego in sleep, we are perfectly happy. So all problems are the root of all problems is only our rising as ego. And we rise as ego attending to other things. So if we, instead of attending to other things, if we look at ourselves to see who am I, ego will subside and disappear, and what we actually are, that alone will remain.
Maybe the provisional problem is when the Chidabhasa appears very, very real because our mind is so impure, no?
And it will always appear in that it will always seem real so long as we're looking at other things. That is Chidabhasa. Chidabhasa means it's often translated as a reflection of awareness, which is one sense, but the more essential meaning of a bhasa is a likeness or appearance. If you look in a mirror, you see your reflection. That reflection is a likeness of yourself, but it's not actually yourself. So ego is the likeness of awareness. It's, as ego, we seem to be aware, but ego is not a real awareness, because real awareness is aware only of what actually exists, which is just itself, nothing other than itself. So being aware of the existence of anything other than ourself, that is Chittabhasa. That is the nature of ego. So long as we are attending to things other than ourselves, they seem to be real. Because why does all this seem to be real? In a dream, for example, so long as we are dreaming, the dream world seems to be real. Why does it seem to be real? Because while dreaming, we experience a dream body as ourselves. Since we are real, when we experience that dream body as ourselves, that dream body seems to be real. And since that dream body is a part of the dream world, the whole dream world seems to be real. Things other than ourselves will always seem to be real. We will seem to be real as ego, and everything else will seem to be real, so long as we rise as ego. So the only solution is to hold on to what is actually real. What is actually real is only I am. It is only because of that, because ego borrows its existence and awareness from I am, so ego seems to be real. It seems to be I am.
Mm-hmm.
But when we hold on to I am, all the adjuncts drop off, and I am alone remains, and that alone is what is real.
In the example of Bhagavan, of the furniture, no, of this topic, yes. Depends of the maturity of the aspirant, no?
Yes.
If you are very, very attached to the Chidabhasa, to this reflect of your pure awareness, you are you have more resistance to look in Kaivalya isolated with I am, no? You have a fever, a very, very power that push you to the furniture, no? To the objects of the phenomena. And what's your opinion, Carlos, no? What's your opinion about the necessity temporarily of do something with the furniture when you have not the determination, the maturity, the capacity to isolate it only in what I am, no? This is what I've too many years ago I listened it to Stephen Bolinsky, no? This disciple of Nisargadatta, no? That is a psychotherapist, no? And he said that in function of the of the level of maturity of the aspirant. If you cannot isolate it in your peer awareness, because your idea of or your sense of I are very, very, very degree, no? Sometimes you need to observe the contents of a phenomenon without implication, trying to establish in what I am as a witness before you can stay only as I am absolutely isolated in Kaivalya. No? What's your opinion?
Okay. There are many different spiritual paths which are suited to people at different levels of spiritual development. But none of their spiritual paths is a final solution. They may seem to solve the problem partially, but none of them is getting to the root of the problem, because the root of the problem is ourself as ego. It is only by investigating ego that we can get rid of it. So yeah, there may be so many other paths. There's yoga, there's bhakti, there's so many different types of meditation, different types of practices people do, different philosophies people have, different aims they have. Even about everyone agrees moksha is our aim, liberation is our aim. But what is moksha? There's so many different conceptions of what is moksha. But if we have come to Bhagavan's path, if we are attracted to Bhagavan's path, we will recognize that this is the ultimate solution. So we are not to, if people want to try to be a detached witness, it's a very superficial practice, because we are always witnessing throughout the waking and dream state. We are constantly witnessing. The only difference is if we take it as a practice, we are trying to imagine ourselves as detached. But the very act of attending is attachment. That is the word Bhagavan uses in verse 25 when he says, grasping form, it comes into existence. The word grasping is patri, which is an adverbial participle of the word of the verb patru. Patru means grasping, holding, attaching. A patru as a noun means attachment. So the very act of attending to anything other than ourselves, we are attaching ourselves to it. We're holding it in our awareness. So there's no such thing as being a detached witness. The very act of attending to anything other than ourselves is an act of is attachment. We are attached. We are holding on to those things in our awareness. If we want to be detached, we have to let go of everything else. And the only way to effectively let go of everything else without falling into layer is to hold on to ourselves. If we just let go of other things, we will end up in layer. We will not. What the key to success, to eradicating ego, is to hold on to ourselves. It is necessary to let go of other things, but it is not sufficient. With every day when we fall asleep, we let go of everything. We become totally detached when we fall asleep. But that only results in manolaya. Sleep is a state of manolaya. It's a temporary dissolution of mind. Mm-hmm. We want to bring about the permanent dissolution of mind, manonasa. In order to achieve that manonasa, it is essential that we investigate ourselves, that we hold on to our fundamental awareness, I am.
I think that the very important point here, no, is that we are trying to point to the radical solution as our ekagrata and focus, with no contemplations for other options, no? For example, Tom Das, in a video recently, I don't know if you know him, speak about the difference between Bhagavan teachings and Rupert Spira in the line of Atmananda, no? Yeah. Jean Klein, say that in this line of Atmananda, they're trying to align the body, speech, and mind with our true nature. This is the focus. This is the principle. Yes. And ultimate, we try to be only ourselves as what we really are. No? But we need to go in this process. But I think that the big difference, no, in this path,
it is.
We point to the center of the dhyana. How is dhyana?
Target.
Right. We point to the center, to the target, yes, all the time.
Yes.
And without concessions to other, yes, options. No? Yes.
Bhagavan always tried. That is, if people came and asked Bhagavan questions, he would first try to turn them to this path. If they were not willing to come to this path, then he would make concessions. He would dilute his teachings. But when he was asked about it, he said, why to start giving diluted teaching? Because if you give a partial truth, you sooner or later have to say, well, this is not the whole truth, or this is not entirely true. Why not tell the whole truth from the outset? The whole truth is, the only way to get rid of ego is to investigate it. All other ways, what you said about trying to align ourselves with our real nature, that is trying to align the unreal with the real. The only way, you can't align the unreal with the what is ego? Ego is nothing but a false awareness of ourselves. So long as we are aware of ourselves as I am this body, we are not aware of ourselves as we actually are. When we're aware of ourselves as we actually are, we're not aware of ourselves as I am this body. The false awareness I am this body, that which is aware of itself as I am this body, is ego. So ego can never be aligned with our real nature. In order to be aligned with our real nature, we must surrender ourselves completely. This ego must be completely eradicated. And it can be eradicated only by self-investigation, only by turning our attention within. So there is so many other teachings. Some are more distant from this. Some seem to be closer than this. Mm. But so long as you're making any concession, to whom are you making the concession? Only to ego. That's what ego wants. It wants a concession because it wants to continue existing. We need to, the only way to attain salvation or liberation or whatever we call it is to eradicate ego. Because as Bhagavan said, ego itself is bondage. So in verse 24 of Uludhanapadu, Bhagavan says ego itself is bondage. In verse 40, the final verse, what is liberation? It's nothing but eradication of ego. So according to Bhagavan, the whole problem from start to finish is ego. All other problems are secondary because they're problems that occur only to ego. Get rid of ego and you get rid of all problems at one stroke. So we are doing a disservice to people if we are diluting this. Okay, Bhagavan sometimes diluted it for those who were not ready to come to this path. But we shouldn't anticipate that people are not ready to come to this path. Now, Bhagavan has the authority to dilute his teachings when it is necessary, because he's the ultimate guru. He's guiding each one of us at our own level. But when we are talking about Bhagavan's teachings, we shouldn't be diluting his teachings. We should point out, this is what Bhagavan has taught us. Take it or leave it. Bhagavan never forced his teachings on anyone. We shouldn't try and force his teachings on anyone. It's futile. It's meaningless, because the key to success in this path, as Bhagavan said, bhakti is the mother of jnana. So that means love is the key to success in this path. So you can't force someone to love something that they don't love. So, but when people ask us if we are following Bhagavan's path, we should point out what Bhagavan has taught. Then it is up to each individual either to take it or to leave it.
Hmm. Yes.
Maybe it is I don't know, it's just I'm guessing. But maybe it's these concessions, as you say, that is because if you don't really have trust that this practice of Amavichara is going to work, because it might seem like avoiding the problem, because the problem is in, as Ernesto said, no, in some specific problem or vasana that you have. So in, it might, I don't know, maybe if you don't have so much trust in this practice, maybe you think that you have to work with that.
Trust is part of a problem. I mean, we do require some trust in this, but it's not a blind trust. If we understand Bhagavan's teachings correctly, and understanding is very crucial in this part, because if we don't understand the teachings correctly, we're not going to understand the practice correctly, because the practice is that is whatever Bhagavan has taught us all has practical implications. So we need to clearly understand what he's taught us. And if we've understood, we will automatically trust it, because it is so clear and obvious that what he's saying is the truth. The problem is whether we want it or not. Are we willing to let go of everything else? Because as Bhagavan said, investigating what this ego is giving up everything. So in order to investigate ourselves, there must be a willingness to let go of everything else. If we are not willing to let go of other things, then we are not yet ready for this path. So when Bhagavan saw people who were not yet who were not willing to come to this path, then he would give some other he would dilute it, his teachings, to the extent that was necessary to make it palatable. He wouldn't dilute to an unnecessary extent. For each person, he would dilute to a certain extent, knowing that if they sooner or later they will be dissatisfied. If you follow any other path, you cannot attain infinite satisfaction by following any other path, because infinite satisfaction can be achieved only by the annihilation of ego. No other path can bring about the annihilation of ego. They may purify the mind, but sooner or later, that purified mind will then be dissatisfied with all other paths and will sooner or later come to this path.
So also it's like, do you agree, Michael, that what keeps the Chijata Granti tied up are the vasanas?
Yes. Ego.
It's natural to think that maybe working on the vasanas is the solution, instead of if you not understanding the teachings. I mean,
it depends what we mean by working on the vasanas.
Yeah,
the only way to work on the vasanas are inclinations. If we allow ourselves to be swayed by those inclinations, we are strengthening them. If we don't allow ourselves to be swayed by them, we are weakening them. So we work on vasanas by ignoring the vasanas and holding on to ourselves.
Not doing any practice with the vasanas.
No. Because that's again giving reality. The vasanas are inclinations. How can you get rid of an inclination by dwelling on it? You can get rid of an inclination only by not being swayed by it. That's the only way.
But the only concession that we have to make in this path is that there is an ego. Otherwise, we would fall into this.
That's our starting point. to deny the ego, for ego to deny ego is the height of foolishness. Those people who say, oh, there's no ego, so nothing to worry about, all you need to do is to see the reality. Who is it who is saying there's no ego? It's only ego is saying there's no ego. So let's not fool ourselves. Ego is not real. Ego doesn't actually exist. But we have to acknowledge the fact that we seem to be ego. Because so long as we seem to be ego, we have a problem.
And we maybe it's like a kid that believes in Santa Claus, for example, and he seems real to the kid.
Yeah.
And you tell them, okay, investigate Santa Claus, look what he does, maybe go behind him, see what he does, and But even though you tell the Santa Claus is false, is fake, the kid believes it's true.
Yeah.
In a way, I mean.
But with the ego, it's not just a matter of belief.
Yeah.
Whether we believe in ego or not, we are ego. So it is, ego is something that is so deeply rooted. It is a deeply rooted false awareness of ourselves. So it can be eradicated. It can be rooted out only by correct awareness of ourselves. This is why Atmavichara, self-investigation, is the only way to eradicate ego. Right? There cannot be any other way. Because in order, since ego is a false awareness of ourselves, it can be eradicated only by correct awareness of ourselves. And how can we be, correct awareness of ourselves means being aware of ourselves as we actually are. How can we be aware of ourselves as we actually are unless we look at ourselves? So long as we're looking away from ourselves, we are just perpetuating ego. So if we understand Bhagavan's teachings correctly, that is, the fundamental principles of Bhagavan's teachings are so simple, so coherent, that is, each one is logically entailed in each other one, it's blindingly obvious that this has to be the only way. There cannot be any other way. So we need to have such, rather than saying trust, we need to have conviction. That conviction is, we gain that conviction partly by studying and thinking deeply about Bhagavan's teachings. But that the conviction that we get by studying and thinking deeply about it, that can be strengthened only by this practice, because the more we practice this, the more the inner clarity shines forth. And the more inner clarity shines forth, the more the stronger our conviction, the clearer it will become that this is the only way.
We need to be Talibans, no? Because this conviction of I have no problem with my life as an ego, no? The salvation as these Talibans, no?
We suicide is the only way to salvation, but suicide it means self. Killing oneself is killing this body is not ourselves. So merely killing the body is not a solution. We need to kill ourselves. That is, we need to kill ego.
But even though we kill ourselves, ultimately, at first the practice is aimed at weakening our vasanas. Ultimately,
let us not worry about vasanas. Yeah. Weakening vasanas is the. It is a necessary effect of self-investigation, but our aim from the beginning shouldn't be, and we should understand that weakening of vasanas is necessary, but we shouldn't be thinking about weakening vasanas when we're investigating ourselves. Right. When we're investigating ourselves, we have one aim and one aim alone, that is to know who am I.
And weakening our vasanas means?
By trying to know who am I, the vasanas are thereby weakened.
Uh-huh. And weakening our vasanas means weakening our will.
Yes. Weakening our will means weakening our liking to go outwards, our liking to attend to anything else. We are strengthening the other side of our will, which is the liking just to be as we are. That is, by weakening the vasanas, we need to weaken of a vishaya vasana, the inclination to attend to anything other than ourselves. The vasana we need to strengthen is sat vasana, the inclination just to attend to and thereby to be what we actually are.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to understand about vasanas, because vasanas are the obstacle, but it's also but understanding about the vasanas entails understanding the nature of vasanas. Vasanas have no independent existence. Whose vasanas are they? Whose inclinations are they? Who is it who is inclined to attend to all these other things? It is only ourselves. So the problem, we have a problem, but that the root problem is ego. Vasanas are a secondary problem. It is the nature of, so long as the root is there, it will keep on sprouting all these vasanas.
Mm-hmm.
So, our aim is to cut the root. In the process of cutting the root, we are thereby weakening the vasanas, which is necessary because we cannot get to the root. So long as, if you've got a very dense bush and you want to root it out, you can't even reach the root. So you first have to cut the leaves and branches. When you cut the leaves and branches to a sufficient extent to get at the root, then you can cut the root. But that's a useful analogy up to a certain point. But in this practice, cutting the leaves and branches and cutting the root are one and the same process. That is, by attending to ourselves, we are weakening the vasanas, and eventually we will eradicate ego. So it's only one, from the beginning to the end, only one thing is required: to be self-attentive.
Sometimes these branches fall down to the base of the tree, no?
Yes.
And you are going to try to cut the root, but you don't see where is the root, because all these branches that you cut in the past, no?
Yeah.
Your desires, no? Your fears, all of that. Bless the view, the clarity of you to cut in the very center of what you really are.
Yeah. That's why I say we need to cut some of the leaves and branches in order to get at the root. We shouldn't be spending all our time just cutting leaves and branches, because our aim is to cut the root. That should be our aim. But it's not two separate. That is, analogies are useful to illustrate certain things, but we shouldn't take analogies too far, because then it will give a different meaning, because nothing is perfectly analogous. So yes, we do need to weaken the vasanas. But how do we weaken the vasanas? The most effective way is by investigating ourselves.
Yes.
So cutting at the root, we are cutting the leaves and branches at the same time.
Yes. No, what I want to say is the focus principle, not our objective, or our aim principle, is to try to attend yourself, but in this way, to try to attend absolutely only what we really are. Mm. Maybe you find these obstacles in the middle, no? And,
yes.
And when you try to only attend what our pure awareness, maybe you need to apply some of Viveka to discriminate what you are not, and fix and claim what you are.
Yes, that is what is required, is that we attend to ourselves. Because of the strength of our vasanas, our attention is often coming out. When our attention comes outwards, then using Viveka, thinking about these things, oh, why should I be concerned about all these things? None of these things are real. What is real is only I am. These are just appearances. So thinking in this way, it doesn't just have to, but I mean, remembering Bhagavan's teachings, dwelling, thinking, meditating on Bhagavan's teachings, doing manana, is a great aid to turning back within. Because Bhagavan's teachings are in so many ways very encouraging us to turn within. So we have to approach this practice intelligently.
Mm-hmm.
We can't force ourselves to attend to ourselves when our mind is being pulled, swayed this way and that way by vasanas. Sometimes we have to give the mind a little bit of leeway and then bring it back.
Mm. Yes.
But we need to be one-pointed. We need to be single-minded. Our sole aim is attending to ourselves. Everything else is useful only to the extent that it helps us to attend to ourselves, that it encourages us to attend to ourselves.
So going back
to Bhagavan's teachings, what Bhagavan's teachings are all about is about this simple practice of being self-attentive, because this simple practice of being self-attentive is the one and only solution. So when we allow our attention away from ourselves, we should remember Bhagavan's teachings and turn back within again.
So that's the only kind of furniture. Bhagavan's
teachings are a great aid.
That's the only furniture that is useful in the room.
Yes, yes, yes. But again, we should be careful not to take analogies too far.
Yeah, right.
because if we understand that analogy correctly, the only way to get... That is, Bhagavan has said we should get rid of all the furniture, and then the space is already there. I mean, there's nothing, there's no, we don't have to bring in space from outside, Bhagavan sometimes said. The space is always there. All we need to do is to clear out the furniture. But then how to clear out the furniture? I don't know if anyone asked Bhagavan that. When Bhagavan said that, an intelligent person would ask, okay, Bhagavan, you say we have to clear out the furniture. How to clear out the furniture? Then he would have explained more deeply, in whose view does all the furniture exist? Only in the view of ego. If you get rid of ego, the furniture, you get rid of the furniture. So investigate ego. That's the implication of that analogy. That's what we should infer from that. We shouldn't just take the analogy. Oh, we've got to get rid of the furniture. So how do I get rid of all these thoughts and phenomena and all these things? And let me get rid of them one by one by one. We have completely misunderstood. So analogies can be very useful pointers, but we need to understand what is being pointed at. But rubbish is all phenomena. In whose view do all phenomena exist? Only in the view of ego. Get rid of ego, you get rid of all the clutter. In sleep, is there any clutter? In sleep, there's only that infinite space of pure awareness, that awareness of our own existence. That's all that exists in sleep. It's a totally uncluttered state. Why then do we experience so much clutter in waking and dream? Because we've risen as ego. Get rid of ego permanently, and you've got rid of all the clutter permanently.
It's a very useful analogy. I like it very much.
Yeah.
It's true. You cannot take it too far, because otherwise it gets blurred. And
with analogies, we always have to understand what is the purpose of the analogy, because any analogy you can misinterpret.
Yeah, and add new interpretations or
yeah. We need to understand what is the purpose of this analogy. What does it illustrate?